being a fighter, you know, you always know that there's a lot going on behind the scenes you don't really know about. Now, being that Floyd and Pacquiao are both champions in their own right, they're both tough fighters, I would never be one to think one is more afraid of the other one. You know what I mean? So a lot of times it just comes down to business. You know, but I think that if I had the opportunity to fight somebody who I felt like was going to be a real challenge for me in the ring, and people felt like I could, that person could possibly beat me, I would definitely get in there to it. I would take less money. So it's never an excuse. At the end of the day, you need to get in there and get it on.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
He lied. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, 41 minutes past the hour. Coming up, ESPN, the inaugural Premier Boxing Champions card this Friday, July the 11th, 9 p.m. in the East, 6 o'clock in the West. Keith Thurman, undefeated welterweight, it looks like 25-0, 21 wax, taking on the, probably about the, I think he's like 33-6, something like that, Luis Collazo. Of course, a B fighter, but a gatekeeper. And if Keith Thurman can't go out there and look spectacular against Luis Collazo, maybe he isn't the fighter we think we want him to be. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing this segment. Next hour, we talk, of course, UFC 189, Conor McGregor. I told you Jose Aldo was getting out of this fight. There was no way he was going to fight with a broken rib. I mean, no way. Come on. You couldn't ask somebody to fight with a broken rib. But so many people out there, including Dana White, said, well, this is the fifth fight he's canceled, the fifth UFC fight he's canceled because of injury. Because of injury, knucklehead. Anyway, we'll talk about that in depth. Hour number two, the MMA hour. Of course, we'll talk some pro wrestling as well. Hour number two, this upcoming hour on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Right now, we're talking the world of boxing, of course, professional boxing. Manager extraordinaire from Texas, Galveston, Houston, down that way, formerly from New York. I'm talking about Bob Spagnuolo. And Bob, how's the family doing? Everybody acclimating well to the weather down there? You had a drought for like years, and it rained about a month ago forever, didn't it?
Yeah, we had a little bit of rain, and no one's worried about the water level down here for some time.
Well, I tell you what, you can pipe some of that water up here. Let's go back to last week. Tim Bradley, a 12-round decision winner over Jesse Vargas. Jesse Vargas, a fighter has benefited by being the house fighter, by getting some close calls, 26-1 now, 9 KOs. Tim Bradley with 12 knockouts. I guess the controversy was that the fight was waved off a little bit early by the referee, Pat Russell. And, of course, he thought he heard the bell, and it wasn't the bell. It was actually the 10-second mark. But straight up, I don't think it had a whole lot to do with the finality of the fight. But I wasn't Jesse Vargas, and I wasn't Tim Bradley, so I don't know. Straight up, as I said, Vargas now 26-1, 9 KOs. I think we can forget about him as far as being a top-level fighter is concerned, because he just can't punch. As far as Bradley's concerned, he says if he goes to 154, he can compete with the likes of Canelo Alvarez and Miguel Cotto. Yeah, nice dream. Anyway, straight up, Bob Spagnuolo.
Well, I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to mention his name in the names of some fighters that he think he, you know, the fact is the poor kid is having to move up two or three weight classes trying to find a place for Massa Bob to fit him in.
Oh, that's... Well,
but, Collazo, yeah. I think it was a great, you know, I think we saw the best of him with Ortiz, and he's still got, you know, I think Thurman is a great young. I watched him in the Olympic trials down here. He was handled by a dear friend of mine that passed away, Ben Getty. He talks about Ben Getty all the time, and when these guys step up, you know, their power is less, everything is less, because, you know, the other guy is more, and those are all the steps that they're trying to take with this kid.
You know, you mentioned Victor Ortiz in just a sentence ago. Talk about Victor Ortiz, of course, the guy that fought Floyd Mayweather and tried to spear Mayweather with his head. I mean, talk about trying to break somebody's face with a headbutt. He was trying to, and then he went out there with his hands down, and Mayweather cracked him. You know, a lot of people thought that was poor sportsmanship on Mayweather's part, but, you know, Bobby, if a guy tried to spear me like that, I'd have cracked him too.
No, come on. But it wasn't even that, and it wasn't no hell of a shot. This guy was looking for an exit door, and that gave it to him. And, you know, he got up smiling like the Cheshire Cat. I mean, to me, you know, when guys hit, listen, and we've all been with fighters that, you know, it wasn't their night and the right thing didn't happen. But when a guy starts celebrating 30 seconds later, you really have to wonder. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's hard to judge being another guy's head. But maybe it's just the old school way that I think, but he was just way too happy for it to be over with for me.
You know, Victor Ortiz told me in San Jose, California, several years ago, that he got roughed up in a fight. He says, you know, maybe this isn't for me because I don't like getting hit and getting beat up. And, of course, later on, of course, he sort of fizzled as a professional a fighter, of course, stuck in welterweight. Not really doing anything nowadays, is he?
You know, I remember in the USA Nationals that year, he knocked out four or five guys, and he was the scourge of the tournament. And people have been excited about him and talking about him ever since. But, hey, listen, when, you know, ever since Maidana, I think, you know, people began to, of course, Maidana was a hell of a fighter. You know, it's hard for us to look back and see because at the time he was, you know, they used to dial 1-800-ARGENTINA to get their victims. You know, when they needed a guy, you know, 28-1 to use, that's where they'd grab them. But these Argentines have produced themselves some great fighters over the last few years. And, you know, that number wasn't the right number to call.
You remember when Luis fought Juan Cogi? You talk about fighters down there from Argentina. Cogi fought down there in Argentina a few times. But you remember that time Luis fought? Remember Cogi got knocked out? He was knocked out cold, and Luis fought and went over in the ring and picked him up and drug him back to the corner and put him on the stool. Do you remember that one?
Well, I think that was all in the merits of safety, Pedro. Luis Vada, God rest his soul, one of the greats. I mean, you talk about who's run stuff in this boxing. I mean, it's pretty amazing stuff. Yeah, that was a heck of a night.
The Luis Vada took over with Roberto Duran, of course, for the late Carlos Hileta, and there was, I mean, Luis Enriquez was Duran's interpreter. And you know what, Bobby, what was so funny was if you understood just a little bit of Spanish, when Enriquez would do the interpretation for Duran, he says something like, "So what does Roberto think of his opponent and his family? Well, I think his wife's a prostitute, et cetera." He's not saying it that way, and a little bit worse than that, and saying these horrible things. And then and Enriquez would say, "Roberto thinks highly of the man's family and of his wife." I mean, it was just amazing the interpretation there that Enriquez would do. He would just like soft pedal this to the American public, and Duran's calling her a puta and all that kind of stuff, and nobody's catching on straight up back in the day.
No, listen, remember after the Leonard fight in Montreal, Leonard went over to grabbed his midriff. And I mean, listen, but it was what made him such a, so similar to Hagler. He was such a fierce competitor that he had to put hate as part of the motivation to win. But remember after the Barkley fight when Duran went over there and hugged Barkley and told him, you know, that he was, I mean, it was one of the first times I ever saw him reciprocate any respect for anybody. Guys would go ahead, fight him life and death, you know, Buchanan, these guys would, but and then at the end he'd just, you know, tell them to, you know, where to go rather than, you know, most great fighters at the end, after it's over, and you congratulate the other guy, but Duran wouldn't have any of it.
Well, you know, it's sort of tough sometimes, Bobby. I mean, I was put in that spot a few times, and guys tried to humiliate me before fights and said things in the newspaper, things like that, that sort of got to your family and, you know, your mother. My mom used to read the paper. And when my mom would read the paper and some guy would pop off and say something nasty about me, you know, it would irritate her, it would irritate me. And the bottom line is, you know, it would get personal. You know, I mean, these things do get personal.
Well, listen, they do. But one of my pet peeves throughout my career is the way that the media has. They push these guys. I remember when Rockman was going to fight Lennox Lewis. I mean, hey, that was a pretty fair fight, okay? Rockman, Lennox Lewis, I mean, are you kidding? But they got him sitting down there right next to each other several days before the fight, and they start questioning Lennox's sexuality. And then, what other sport do you see them do that? You do a, they forget about that. What other sport would they possibly allow that for someone's, you know, family to be brought into to combat sport like this or any sport? What business does it have? To me, it's just a cheap, you know, it's just cheap, you know, that you got to, here they are fighting for their lives in the ultimate blood sport, and you got to jazz it up for somebody. It's like when the great John Madden said when they brought comedians into to be part of the NFL football team. He said, you know something, if you got to be entertained while you're watching NFL football, I can't help you.
You know what's funny is you brought up sexuality and things like that, and straight up, Orlando Cruz and his team came to me about 2002, And they said, you know, hey, you know, we're thinking about coming out. I said, you know, I don't think the time is right. I really don't. And they go, well, you're the guy, you're from San Francisco. And they thought I was, you know, I was had an alternative lifestyle. But the bottom line was we talked about it in 2002 in Las Vegas, the MGM Grand. I said, I don't think it's the time is right. 10 years later, he did in 2012. Now he doesn't have to, you know, he doesn't have to be ashamed. But you know what, Bobby, what this whole thing boiled down to and what people don't understand is that it boils down to civil rights. And everybody has a right to lead a happy life, no matter what it is. If you want to sit on top of a mountain in a tent and you can rent that space or you can own that space and you have a tent, you can do that. You can do whatever you want. That's what this country's all about.
Well, I've known Orlandito since, you know, before he turned professional through my association with Juan de Leon. And El Olimpio is Olimpico is what he was nicknamed because he represented Puerto Rico in the Olympics. And but obviously, listen, God bless him. And it takes a lot of courage under any circumstances. Listen, it takes courage just to be a fighter. I tell everybody, man, if you go up those three steps and get up in there for the whole world to see you fail, and that's what a bunch of them want to see you do, there's not, you could never have much more pressure than that on anybody. But to come out and but I thought it was great, even for our tough business. I think it was you know, handled well, and you know, all the best to him. And you know, hopefully he'll get off those Telemundo shows and get to fight on one of the big shows here.
You know, you buddy, earlier in the show you mentioned Howard Davis, of course, the MVP of the 1976 Olympic team. You know, I sort of thought he got Rosario in that fight. Of course, he got decked in the 12th round, but I thought he won enough rounds to win that fight last night. I thought he was shorted that night against Rosario. Of course, that was a WBC title fight. I think it was in Puerto Rico to boot. Or Florida.
Yeah, well, nothing against the Puerto Ricans because I don't want the switchboard to light up. But listen, they just figured they were going to get it if they came to your hometown, so you damn sure were going to get it when you came to theirs. But guys like Rosario didn't necessarily need to give it that much because they usually ended it. But, yeah, Howard was a great fighter, a great champion, and I think had a real good life after boxing. You see him helping his son. But, I've always had a ton of respect for him. It was hard being at the top as an amateur with all that great team and then be surpassed by several of your teammates, but he wore it well. He was always a gentleman.
And the forgotten guy of that 76 team is Leo Randolph. Want to go?
Maybe Chuck Walker, but no, they had forgotten guys on there for sure. And, but Leo Randolph, I heard he was up, you know, I work for Mike Wilson, who's an undefeated prospect in Oregon now, and that's Leo Randolph was out of Tacoma, Washington, and I think he, you know, retired there.
Well, let's talk about the kid from Oregon. Of course, I get a lot of emails on him from my man Johnny Eddie up there. Anyway, the bottom line is Medford, Oregon. He's hot in Medford. Is that where he's from?
Well, yeah, no, that's his hometown. It's
okay.
A small city in what they call the Central Valley, the Rogue River Valley, and just, 70, 80 miles north of the California border. And Mike Wilson was a several-time United States amateur super heavyweight champion, but, you know, he used to fight at about 235 pounds, but now that he's kind of living his life a little bit differently and running marathons and living great, he only weighs about 200. So he's fighting as a cruiserweight, and he's an undefeated prospect. But listen, he represented his community for years all over the country, you know, as an amateur. And now, you know, in the first time that he fought as a professional at home, they turned out great. And he drew over 2,000 people paid, and it was a huge success there at the county fairgrounds. And you know me, Pete, I always love the local hero. I tell everybody, if you don't mean anything in your own hometown, you don't mean anything anywhere.
Get the kid for me. The great Bob Spagnuolo, folks. Galveston, Texas, Houston, Texas. If you need a fight manager, this is the guy. Straight up, I'll give you his phone number. I'm just kidding. Hey, Bob, have a good time.
Great to talk to you, Pete.
Thank you so much. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I think Spagnuolo is freaking out. He's going to get my name out over my phone number out there. He wouldn't do that. Of course I would. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Bob Spagnuolo at AOL.com. You are tuned to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. This Friday, Keith Thurman, Luis Collazo, ESPN, July the 11th, 9 p.m. in the East, 6 o'clock in the West.